Let me ask you something before we go anywhere today. You did everything right. You planned the cross country. You drew the line on the chart. You got the weather. You checked the winds aloft. You've got fuel reserves and an alternate and a flashlight in the bag. And then you roll out to the runway on a warm summer morning at an airport, sitting up at 5,000 feet. You firewall the throttle, and the airplane just doesn't want to fly. The runway end is coming up, and you're not where you should be. That gap. That gap between the airplane you trained in down at sea level and the airplane you're sitting in right now, on a hot day up high. That's what I want to talk about. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Pattern, and you're listening to Traffic Pattern, the show where we try to make you a sharper, safer pilot, one topic at a time. Today, we're talking about density altitude, and specifically the way it quietly steals your climb performance on a cross country, on exactly the kind of day when you least expect it. Let's walk through this together. Before we get into it, quick shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial. They've got you covered. It's a great way to mark the milestones that matter, and let me tell you, finishing a real cross country into high terrain is one of those milestones. AviationSoul.com. Okay, density altitude. Here's the thing that makes this dangerous. It is not a weather phenomenon you can see. There's no wall of cloud. There's no line of thunderstorms on the radar. The sky can be severe clear, the prettiest flying day you have ever seen, and that beautiful day is exactly the day density altitude reaches up and bites a pilot who wasn't expecting it. So let's define it in plain language, because the textbook definition trips people up. Pressure altitude is what your altimeter reads when you set it to 29.92. It's your height in a standard atmosphere. Density altitude is pressure altitude corrected for temperature. That's it. Density altitude is the altitude your airplane thinks it's flying at, based on how thin the air actually is right now. And here's why that matters. Your wing, your propeller, and your engine all care about one thing. They care about how many air molecules are packed into a given chunk of sky. Thick air, lots of molecules, the wing makes good lift, the prop takes a good bite, the engine makes good power. Thin air, fewer molecules, and every one of those three systems gets weaker at the same time. Three things hurt the air's density, altitude, temperature, and humidity. Go up. The air thins, heat it up. The air expands and thins. Add moisture, and water vapor is actually lighter than dry air, so the air thins a little more. Now here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. Most of us learn to fly at one or two airports. We get used to how our airplane behaves at those airports. And then we build a mental picture of normal that's really just normal at my home field on the days I usually fly. The cross country is where that picture breaks. You take that same Cessna 172, fully loaded with three friends and full tanks, the way you never flew it as a student, and you fly it to a field 2,000 or 3,000 feet higher than home on a 90-degree afternoon. Same airplane. Completely different machine. Let me give you the real scenario, because this is where it gets practical. Picture a field at, say, 4,500 feet elevation. Pretty common out west, it's summer. The temperature is 95 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, on a standard day, the temperature at 4,500 feet would be somewhere around 51 degrees. We're way above that. We are more than 40 degrees Fahrenheit hotter than standard. Run that out, and your density altitude on that runway is somewhere up around 7,500 to 8,000 feet. Let that sink in, you're sitting still on the ground. Brakes set, and your airplane is performing as if it's already at 8,000 feet in the air. What does that do to you? A normally aspirated engine, the kind most of us fly behind, loses roughly 3% of its power for every 1,000 feet of density altitude. At 8,000 feet density altitude, you've left a quarter of your horsepower on the table before you ever release the brakes. Your takeoff roll stretches out, and not by a little. Depending on the airplane, a density altitude like that can double your ground roll and cut your rate of climb down to a trickle. The airplane that climbs at 700 feet per minute at home might give you 150 up here, maybe less, fully loaded. And the cruel part is how it feels in the cockpit. The airplane will lift off. It feels like it's flying. The airspeed is alive. The wheels come up off the pavement. But it's mushy. It's not climbing, and now you've got rising terrain ahead because, surprise, high airports are usually surrounded by high ground. That's the trap. It flew well enough to get you in the air and not well enough to get you over what's in front of you. So let's talk about what you actually do about it. This is a planning problem first and a stick and rudder problem second. and the planning is where you win or lose it. Step 1. Before the flight, you compute it, not estimate it, compute it. Pull out your E6B, the little flight computer, or the one on your phone, or just use the density altitude chart in the back of your pilot's operating handbook. You need the field elevation, the altimeter setting, and the temperature. The temperature is the one people forget to update. You planned this flight last night when it was cool. You're departing at 2 in the afternoon when it's 20 degrees hotter. Get the current temperature. Many airports broadcast it on the ATIs or the automated weather, and that gives you density altitude directly at a lot of fields now, but you should still know how to find it yourself. Step 2. Take that density altitude into the performance charts in your handbook. And this is the part that separates a real cross-country pilot from someone who just hopes. Your handbook has a takeoff distance chart and a climb performance chart. Use the density altitude, your actual weight, and the runway condition, and read out the numbers. Takeoff ground roll. Distance to clear a 50-foot obstacle, rate of climb. Now compare that distance to the runway you actually have. The examiner is looking for exactly this on your check ride, by the way. The airman certification standards under cross-country planning and under performance and limitations want to see that you can take real numbers, apply them to real conditions, and make a go or no-go decision. They are not looking for "it'll probably be fine." They want the number, and they want you to know what the number means. And here's the honest part, the part I won't gloss over. Those book numbers assume a brand new airplane, flown by a test pilot, with a clean engine making full rated power. Your airplane is not new and you're not a test pilot. So a lot of experienced mountain pilots take that book takeoff distance and add 50% as a safety pad. If the book says you need 2,000 feet of ground roll and you've got a 3,000-foot runway, the book says you're fine. But with that pad, you're looking at 3,000 needed against 3,000 available. And now it's a much more serious conversation. Step 3 is where you give yourself options on the ground. Before you commit, a few of these have saved more lives than any gadget in the panel. Go early or go late. Density altitude is a temperature game, and temperature follows the sun. That same field at 4,500 feet might have a density altitude of 5,500 at 7 in the morning and 8,000 by mid-afternoon. If the airplane can't safely make the climb at 2 in the afternoon, the answer might simply be, leave at 7. The atmosphere is a different place at dawn. Reduce the weight. You are not required to take off with full tanks and 4 people. Lift is fighting gravity, and on a thin air day, you can give yourself margin by leaving fuel behind and planning a fuel stop somewhere lower, or by making 2 trips with passengers, or by burning down some fuel. Weight is the one variable you fully control. Use it. Use all the runway. All of it. Back taxi to the very end. Don't accept an intersection departure to save 2 minutes of taxi when you might need every foot. The pavement behind you is the most useless thing in aviation, and lean the mixture for the takeoff. This is the one a lot of low-altitude pilots get wrong, because down at sea level we're trained to shove that mixture full rich for takeoff and never touch it. Up high, full rich actually chokes the engine. You're feeding it sea level fuel for high altitude air and you lose power and you can foul the plugs. The technique at a high field is to run the engine up to full throttle while you're still stopped and lean the mixture to get the maximum RPM or to the fuel flow your handbook specifies for that density altitude. Check your handbook for the exact procedure because it varies, but the principle holds. At altitude, peak power lives at a leaner setting, not full rich. Let me give you the takeoff itself because the technique matters once you've made the decision to go. On a high-density altitude departure, you want to let the airplane accelerate to the right speed and fly off the runway, not yank it off early. Pulling it off below its best speed in thin air gets you airborne and ground effect, that cushion of denser air right near the surface, and then the airplane settles right back down or wallows along inches off the deck, unable to climb out of its own ground effect. Let it accelerate, let it fly when it's ready. Then pitch for your best rate of climb speed, your VI. Or if there's an obstacle, your best angle, your VX, and hold it precisely. A few knots off on a sea level day costs you nothing you'd notice. A few knots off up here is the whole ball game. And know you're out before you roll. Where does the terrain rise? If this isn't climbing the way the numbers promised, what's your plan? Sometimes the right answer is a turn toward lower terrain, toward a valley, rather than trying to outclimb a ridge that's winning. Brief that to yourself out loud before you advance the throttle. The takeoff briefing isn't just a sea-level habit. It matters most exactly here. Now I want to come back to the cross-country angle, because density altitude doesn't just live at the departure end. It rides with you the whole flight. Your service ceiling, the altitude where your airplane can only manage 100 feet a minute of climb, is published at gross weight on a standard day. On a hot day, loaded up, your real-world ceiling can be thousands of feet lower than the book. So if your route crosses a mountain pass at, say, 9,500 feet, you need to honestly ask whether the airplane can actually get up there and still have a margin to maneuver. On the actual day, at the actual temperature, at the actual weight. Crossing a ridge, the guidance a lot of mountain instructors teach is to cross at least 1,000 to 2,000 feet above it and to approach it at a 45-degree angle so that if the air is sinking on the lee side, or you're just not climbing, you can turn away toward lower ground instead of being committed straight at rising rock. And it shows up at the destination, too. That field you're flying into might be higher and hotter than where you left. Your true airspeed on approach is higher in thin air, even though your indicated airspeed reads the same. So your ground speed over the fence is faster, and your landing roll is longer. The same thin air that hurt your takeoff lengthens your landing. Plan the arrival the way you plan the departure. So let's bring this all the way home with a takeaway you can use on your very next flight, even if your next flight is nowhere near a mountain. The habit is this. Density altitude is part of your pre-flight planning every single time, not just when you're headed somewhere high. Get in the routine now at your home field, on an ordinary day. Compute the density altitude. Pull the takeoff and climb numbers out of your handbook for the actual conditions and the actual weight. Say the rate of climb out loud, do it enough times at sea level where it doesn't matter, and it'll be automatic on the day it does matter, the day you're sitting at the end of a short runway, high and hot and heavy, and you need to know, before you release those brakes, whether the airplane in your hands can actually do what you're about to ask it to do. Learning to fly is hard, and it is expensive. And across country into real terrain is one of the most rewarding things you will ever do with an airplane. I don't want to scare you off it. I want you to go do it. I just want you to go do it with the numbers run and the margins built, so the only surprises are the good kind. The kind where you crest a ridge and the whole world opens up underneath you. The performance data and procedures I leaned on today come straight out of your aircraft's pilot's operating handbook, and the FAA's own pilot's handbook of aeronautical knowledge, and the planning standards trace right back to the airman certification standards. Read your own handbook, it knows your airplane better than I do. You can find us at radiohangar.com. Run the numbers before you go, fly the airspeed once you're rolling, and I'll see you next time.